My name is Josh Ballard. I'm the editor for the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. As of today, South Africa has begun a 21-day lockdown. So far, my neighbor has walked his dog 3 times in a day, and I've spent the whole day eating leftover pizza and working on what you're listening to right now. I know South Africans are tough, and we will get through this no matter what, and the same remains true for the human race.
In Serbia, they have sent all the kids home, and what they are doing now is they are recording and airing on national television, like, you know, from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. is first grade, from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., etc. So,
the internet can often be a really vicious place, but over the last couple of weeks, as it's become a primary way to connect, I think it's really teaching us to look beyond avatars, profile pictures, and pretty websites. It's forcing us to slow down and respond instead of react. This moment is teaching us to see each other's humanity, become more empathetic, and contemplate so many of the things that we take for granted.
Don't wait for the big events of your life. Don't wait for the wedding or the, you know, near death or for some other, you know, major event. Yeah. But in the day-to-day, you know, I mean, look, we spend all this time imagining we're going to get ready for our dying. And I think it's a kind of absurd idea to imagine that at the time of our dying, we will have the strength of body, the emotional stability, the mental clarity to do the work of a lifetime. It's an absurd gamble. So we should do this work now. And that includes those of us who are not dying, who are with, you know, our aging parents, for example. Be with them now. Tell them you love them now, you know. Waiting is full of expectation. Waiting for the next moment to arrive, we miss this one, you know. Waiting for the moment of dying, we miss all the moments in between.
It turns out that social distancing is teaching us a lot about social connection. We're seeing each other's faces and hearing each other's voices more than ever before.
I have been thinking a lot about this, especially because of my situation living in Myanmar and being really far from my home and from my family and friends. So I left France 6 years ago, and I only come back once a year. I was actually supposed to go back home next week, but when Corona hit France really hard, it meant that I didn't know when I will see my friends and family again when I haven't seen them for more than a year. It's been quite interesting. For my mother, since I moved to Myanmar, we used to call each other maybe every 10 days or so, just talking briefly and making sure we're just okay. But since the beginning of the confinement, we have almost daily calls, and it feels like being back to our old routine when I was still living back home. We share videos of our daily lives, of us cooking, spending quality time, and basically sharing our quarantine from the other side of the world.
My name is Akira Chan, and I'm a filmmaker based out of Southern California. I'm finding myself wanting to have longer conversations, to have FaceTimes with family members I haven't spoken to in a long time, and to avoid these kind of digital shortcuts that I've been practicing. I think we all have for many years. Quick texts to keep updated with people, quick replies on posts on social media. It's almost like we're unpacking this spectrum of intimacy that we've been bypassing in other ways. And if there's anything good that might come out of this and that we can hopefully take with us as a lesson, it's this basic human need to communicate and connect and know who our neighbors are and actually sit down and have long conversations and to, in many ways, just slow down to the speed of humanity.
So this week, we turned to our listeners, and we asked them to share their stories, perspectives, and insights from a moment in history unlike any other. We asked a doctor who's working on the front lines what she wanted us to know. And P.S., that doctor happens to be that sister that you've heard me mention so many times on the show. I've always been really proud of her, but never as much as I am right now for the work that she's doing.
Hi, my name is Sarisha Rao, and I'm an anesthesiologist and ICU doctor. I'm Srini's little sister, who many of you may have heard him mention in various episodes. I'm part of my hospital's COVID-19 care team, and I just want to take a moment to share a little insight from the front lines. This illness is definitely upon us and will only increase over time. We're just now starting to see the effects of this on the hospital system, and the fears that we will be overwhelmed are well-founded. Not only do we worry about having more patients than we can treat, but also running out of personal protective equipment to keep all healthcare workers safe while treating these patients. The good news is you can do something to help this situation, and that is to stay home. Even if you're young and healthy, you can be an asymptomatic carrier and spread it to those who are more vulnerable. Staying home will help spread out the number of people that require hospitalization over time and give healthcare providers a chance to adequately treat them. So please do your part to flatten the curve and stay home. Also, take appropriate measures to protect yourself. Wash your hands frequently with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Avoid touching your face or mouth. And when possible, maintain 6 feet of distance from others. And again, stay home. Social distancing does not have to mean loneliness. We're really fortunate to live in an era of vast means of communication with FaceTime and Zoom. So take this opportunity to stay in touch with loved ones. Together we can get through this. Stay safe.
Søren Kierkegaard said that all change is preceded by crisis. And crisis always seems to be the catalyst for change. Whether it's an identity crisis, health crisis, or economic crisis, it can often be the spark that ignites the flame of significant change in our lives.
Hi, I'm Joseph Logan, and I'm a founder coach for startups and scale-ups based in Colorado. I tend to work with founders and teams to drive scalable growth, and you can learn more about that at resilientfounder.com or theteamsthething.com. A few years ago, I gave a talk called The Upside of Crisis at TEDx Boulder. Most of the time, most of us cling to the status quo, and that goes for people, companies, communities. But there is an exception, the period following a crisis. Crisis breaks the status quo. Crisis forces us to change. I had a professor in grad school who said that no real change ever happens without a crisis. And of course, being somewhat naive, I said, well, what do you do if you need change but you don't have a crisis? And he said, you make one up. I think that's a little flip and a lot over the top, but it gets at an important point. Trying to make change in stable times is like trying to push a boulder up a hill. Change after a crisis is like watching a boulder roll down a hill. It's just inevitable. Change and crisis are often the same thing happening at different speeds. Most of the people I meet in my work get this. These are people who are trying to change the world. That kind of boldness always flirts with crisis. Most of my coaching clients come to me because of a crisis, either one they're experiencing, sometimes one they've created. What I know about them is this: the most creative periods of their lives are the ones immediately following a crisis. They start companies, they invent things, they build communities, they change jobs or careers. Crisis always creates some kind of change. And the question is, what kind of change do we want it to be? I think this crisis is particularly tragic. There's a lot of death. There's a lot of loss of jobs and security. But I also think that this is a time that we're going to look back on and see just tremendous innovation. Generally, companies and solopreneurs who aren't solving real problems tend to get bounced out of the market over time. But a crisis like this forces that. So you have three choices: fail, survive, or thrive. Failure is obvious. It means closing the doors. Survive is actually failure over time. Thriving is focusing on that real problem for a real customer and delivering something to them in ways that they might not have imagined. The companies that do this are not only going to grow, but are already growing even through the slowdown. So I think the upside is big innovation.
And if there really is an upside to this crisis, we figure who better to ask than an actual economist.
We see some glimpses of hope, but I think they're just kind of pauses for maybe second waves of the virus to come. And what is this doing is making a supply shock to the economy. For that, I mean, like, think about all the factories and manufacturing facilities, people that are working on the economy, like delivery services, restaurants, airlines. So those are the first businesses that are being affected by this virus. And because obviously getting them back is of concern, people are not making consumption decisions. And that slowly is creating a train wreck on the supply side. And on the demand side, I think that world central banks are doing their work, but up to a limit, because rates cannot fall forever, and they can fall up to the point where they go to zero, which is right now where they are. And that's as far as what the Fed can do to help stimulate the demand. So basically what the Fed is doing, in common words, is printing money. When they lower the rate, they're providing more liquidity to banks and the entire financial system. And that liquidity helps to cope with that demand. But when supply suffers, but demand cannot go get that improvement, a significant improvement, I don't really want to overwhelm you with economic jargon, but this is going to cause a recession. And a recession is defined by just a textbook definition, two consecutive quarters of negative growth in the gross domestic product. So the entire production of the economy has to fall consecutively for 6 months. And when a recession is so deep that it lasts for a long time, then it becomes a depression. Hopefully we don't get a depression, but I'm seeing a lot of behaviors in the financial markets, severe drops in stocks that are actually discounting for that probability of having a depression. And then we start thinking about how an economy recovers from a recession. And that generated one of my comments in the Mighty Networks, where I said, this might be a V-shaped recovery. So you fall and then you come up really quick. And that's very, I think, low probabilistically speaking. I think we might get a U-shaped recovery, which is kind of, you can see a U-shape where slowly we're going to get up after this severe shock that we are experiencing. But as the virus is out there, and I'm thinking, okay, it's okay, we are at home working and telecommuting for a month, but what if this happens for 2 months or 3 months, or what if the entire economy shuts down for a whole month, which is perhaps what needs to happen? So if an economy entirely shuts down for a month, then many companies will become bankrupt. And that might be a prescription to create a depression in the coming years. So we haven't experienced a depression since the 1929. So no one of us has been lived through that and understand the complexities of living under a depression. Hopefully we don't get there. That's why it's called an L-shaped recovery. Think about an L letter, then it goes like that. And it continues going like that until very long. And also potential GDP is another thing that we've been discussing. Mm-hmm. So what is the economy capable of being producing? The entire economy, and where we're at now is below the potential. So we're already under a new normal. And this has been in discussion by several economists, whether we were already in a new normal, because regardless of the strong recovery that we had for the last decade, we have not been able to recover that trend of the GDP growth. I think we were in a new normal with maybe more productivity, given the technology. But since then, we haven't been able to recover the output that the economy was capable of producing before the 2008 crisis. And now with this virus, I think things are going to change. Some areas of our lives are going to be changed structurally. I was looking at new ways of finding how we can touch things, for like holographic images, for example. New technologies are going to emerge. Automatic doors. Don't be surprised if that next time you go to a restroom, you find an automatic door that, you know, detects you and you don't have to push a door. Things like that are going to be used more and more because we humans are going to be really concerned about touching surfaces and stuff like that. So those are the things that I think are going to be changing in our brains structurally forever. But hopefully what we don't change is the need for connection and the need to connect with each other and the understanding and acceptance that we need each other. That is what's going to make us recover faster.
Over the last year, I've become a lot closer to my family, closer than we've ever been. And when we normally get together in person,
it's chaotic and loud, but also full of a lot of energy and love and always good food.
Somehow we've managed to replicate all of this on Zoom. We talk about the meals we eat, interrupt each other constantly, but somehow it's still filled with laughter and love. We're starting to see the value of connecting face-to-face like never before, and it's made me wonder why this isn't the way that we've used technology to connect all along. While the headlines might be filled with gloom and doom, there's something that I always try to remember at times like this.
It's all about connecting with the sun, because when we wake up before the sun, we're able to see that transition from darkness to light. And I think there's something so deeply healing to the human psyche about seeing that happen, because it's a reminder to us that, like, the darkness is temporary and it passes and gives way for the light of the sun and of the day. So too do these dark habits and destructive patterns and thoughts that we have only have a temporary existence.